This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
Not so controlled. Seduces.
That's a ballet company director in a scene from the new movie Black Swan. He's angry and exasperated during an audition starring Natalie Portman, who plays a troubled dancer desperate for the lead role. Come on, he says. Attack it. Attack it. But Portman looks frantic and overwhelmed, and she just can't seem to get it. Critics of traditional ballet culture say scenes like this reveal many of the pressures put on professional dancers. The push to stay thin, the importance of being strong but lithe. Now, ballet companies say that portrayal is exaggerated and that reputable dance organizations protect their dancers. Joining us now is Margaret Tracy. She's a former principal dancer with the New York City Ballet. She's also director of the Boston Ballet School. Margaret, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Jose Mateo. He's the founder and artistic director of the Jose Mateo Ballet Theater. Thanks for coming in. I want to first present a view of a woman named Suzanne Gordon, who is the author of several books, including one that's called Off Balance, The Secret World of Ballet. And you may have recently seen an op-ed she wrote for the Boston Globe that was headlined Starving for Their Art. And Suzanne had basically been a real fan of ballet, but her perspective is that the more she began to study ballet and get into that world, she kind of learned too much about it and it turned her off. She felt like she knew too much about the pressures that were put on them. And that ballet dancers were pushed to almost be prepubescent in their bodies, no matter how old they had gotten. And I guess I want both of your perspectives on whether the ballet world really does go so far that in this push to have perfection and bodies that are flawless, we both push dancers too far, and then maybe we don't give chances to people who could be equally talented but just may not physically have the body types to allow it. Suzanne Gordon, again, Margaret Tracy, do you want to take that first? You're a former dancer.
What I want to first start off by saying is that from my perspective of both, as you mentioned, being a former principal ballet dancer with New York City Ballet, and then in my work for the past 3.5 years with the Boston Ballet Institution, we take very seriously the health and wellness of each and every one of our dancers and our dance students. I can attest to the fact that many, many resources are put into making sure that there is appropriate and accessible resources and services to help dancers develop healthy habits, from nutritional consultation, from physical therapy assessments, to any wide range of multidisciplinary services to help support the education and the wellness for each and every one of the professional dancers.
And again, most reputable dance companies would have those mm-hmm. kinds of wellness programs, monitoring nutrition and health.
Absolutely.
And injury prevention.
Absolutely.
And injury healing. There was a student at Columbia University last year, though, who had done a master's thesis about wellness programs in mm-hmm. pre-professional ballet schools. And the thesis basically found that there are enormous physical, emotional, and mental demands placed mm-hmm. on classical ballet students, and that really comes at enormous cost to the dancers themselves. And she found, and I'm reading from her thesis, a startlingly high rate of physical, emotional, and mental difficulties among ballet students, including most obviously eating disorders among many of them. So do you think that despite these wellness programs, these problems persist?
Well, in my experience, I think there are so many people in the industry today that are very educated about nurturing the whole student, particularly in a ballet school. So the philosophy that we all know as dance educators is that there's a small percentage of students that do actually go on to have careers as professionals. So we have to be very, very careful in looking at our students in their individual development and making sure that we're encouraging them to create a well-balanced lifestyle. Yes, there are physical and emotional demands placed upon students who study this art form, very similar to an athlete performing and training at a certain professional level or a competitive level. So I think the importance of partnering with professionals in the medical field is where we need to get the message across about how to educate our students and our families in partnering with them to support a well-balanced, healthy ballet students.
Listeners, we're talking about the current state of ballet and whether some of the pressures put on dancers are so intense that they lead to problems like eating disorders, the kind that were portrayed in The Black Swan, the movie now out. We wonder if you're a dancer, a former dancer, if you think ballet does need to be rethought, if you're a fan or a patron, if you'd be willing to see a different type of body, maybe a heavier body dancing, if you think that's the way to improve how ballet works now. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I'm talking to Margaret Tracy. She's a former principal dancer with the New York City Ballet, and she's director of the Boston Ballet School. And also Jose Mateo, who's founder and artistic director of Jose Mateo Ballet Theater. Jose, I understand that you're actually trying to change the ballet aesthetic. And maybe you can tell us first, what is the traditional aesthetic for the ballerina body?
Well, I don't know that I'm trying to change the aesthetic. I'm trying to basically demonstrate the breadth of that aesthetic. I think if you're going to address any of these issues that you've brought up, you want to separate ballet as an art form from ballet as a culture. And when you look at the ballet culture, you want to separate the institutions from the majority of ballet organizations that aren't so well resourced so as to provide these wellness programs and other means of educating their students. And then you also have to really wonder why these wellness programs are so necessary. And the fact is that there are a lot of stresses placed on dancers. The unfortunate thing is when those stresses are unnecessarily placed on those students. It is very possible to have a very well-balanced, fit mentally and physically, nutritionally sound dancer who reaches all sorts of wonderful heights in terms of the mastery of the ballet form and not undergo the impact of some of the pressures that many dancers, in fact, do.
Jose Mateo, do you feel concerned about the pressures put on dancers?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are ways that we can achieve the standards that needn't be compromised.
What do you think the pressures are? I mean, are dancers pushed to be close to skeletal in order to achieve what they need to achieve on stage?
No, and this is a problem, again, of the ballet culture. I think there's a perception that dancers have to be rail thin in order to achieve, in order to be noticed, in order to get certain roles. And none of those things are necessarily true. Unfortunately, there are also directors and people within the profession who are helping guide these youngsters who perhaps are under the same impression. But in reality, the aesthetic does not require people to be unhealthy.
Suzanne Gordon, I'm interested in your thought on what is required. I'm sorry. Margaret Tracy, I'm interested in your thought on what is required of a dancer who can compete at the level that they compete at when they're with a place like Boston Ballet. What does a body need to look like?
Well, you have to look at the dancer, as Jose said. This is less about the aesthetic of dance than about the athleticism of dance. Just as if certain body types are more appropriate for specific athletics such as gymnastics or marathon running, or even to be a competitive crew athlete. There are body types that are more suited for the demands of the technique within the tradition of classical ballet. So the focus has to be on developing thinking of dancers as athletes. And I know that was a big part of my education as a young professional dancer, was the education about looking at myself not just as an artist, but as an athlete. And if I wanted to stay competitive and continue to be able to perform at my peak, being healthy, and was imperative. So as Jose mentioned, looking at the breadth of the dancers and within that athletic component is where we need to place our focus.
As I'm sure both of you know, just this past week, there was a review in the New York Times by the dance critic Alistair McCauley, and he was doing a review of the New York City Ballet's production of The Nutcracker. And in that review, he criticized the principal dancer, a woman named Jennifer Ringer, and he said that she looked like she, quote, ate a sugar plum too many. Now, Jennifer Ringer, who he was talking about, has actually struggled with eating disorders, and many people had criticized this reviewer for this comment, and he ended up writing another column later trying to explain it. Margaret Tracy, first, I understand that Jennifer Ringer is a former colleague and a friend of yours. You know her.
Yes, she's the godmother of my daughter, Paige, actually.
So then this reviewer then wrote another article where he explained his criticism. You know, he pointed out that it's not the first time he's criticized dancers, but he says that when he criticizes male dancers, he tends to get no response, but that when he criticizes female dancers for their physiques, he does. And he wrote, quote, "Fat, apparently, is not so much a feminist issue as a sexist one. Sauce for the goose? Scandal. Sauce for the gander? No problem." That's the end of his quote. I wonder what your thoughts were about seeing this play out in the paper, assuming that both of you read it. Jose Mateo?
Well, I think that as the data comes in, we'll find that some of these eating disorders are becoming more prevalent among males. And I think the concern is going to shift, and we're going to realize that it isn't a gender issue. It's really something that everyone subjected to the wrong stresses is going to be at risk. And so I think the sports analogy is a very valid one. What we have to realize is that as with professional sports or as with sports, only a tiny, tiny, tiny minority is going to enter the professional realm. Yet we're looking to grow our schools and invite more and more people to learn about the art form. So the question is, do we teach for virtuosity the way professional sports teach for a level of peak performance that really is part of the world of the elite athlete, or do we teach people about the aesthetic and the beauty of the art form, and can we assess how much of that education requires that we push dancers to the extreme that we sometimes do?
Margaret Tracy of the Boston Ballet School, do you think that there are some dancers who no matter how talented they are, no matter how skilled they are as dancers, just will never have the body type to make them able to perform on stage for Boston Ballet?
That's a good question. There is some subjectivity in that, in what is considered the ideal body type. And I think there are enough artistic directors leading American companies that show that they have an interest in a range of different types of body types within the realm of their company. You look at Boston Ballet, and we have some very small petite dancers. We have some strong, very tall, athletic dancers. There is a range amongst our roster, as you'll see in any major American ballet company.
What would you say to a dancer who showed up and you just felt that their body was not cut out for classical ballet? How do you break that to someone?
Well, I try. It's about education. It is not my job to break that information to them. It is my job to expose them to the beauty of the dance world. Part of our curriculum at our school is to offer a wide range of different kinds of dance, including modern and character dance, so that a dancer has an opportunity to explore other disciplines of dance that they may be more suited for, and so that they don't have to feel as if they're told that they'll never be a dancer. Again, we see many talented dancers with beautiful body types, and let's face it, the recent economic situation in our country, where many major companies had to cut back on the number of dancers, there's just a lack of jobs for the many talented students we already see. So it's more about helping our, as an educator at a major ballet school, it's about educating people to fall in love with this art form in the many different capacities in which they can be a part of this beautiful art form.
We have a caller from New York City, actually, and this is Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, your thoughts about the current state of ballet?
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to mention that in my research, when I was looking at student wellness programs, one of the concerns about the schools is that they're training their dancers with to be more attuned to their own health and you know, positive eating habits and good body image ideas. And then those same students are looking at the companies around them, especially the bigger ballet companies, and they're seeing a very different body type than the one that they're being taught is acceptable at the school level.
Is this Elizabeth Sullivan?
Yes.
Okay, I referenced earlier this Columbia master's thesis project, and you're the author of that study, in which you talked about the emotional and physical tolls. Okay. So you feel that although these wellness programs are there, they have limitations?
I think that there's a gap between what people are doing for students and what companies are willing to accept as a body type. So I think that gap, it would be great if we could draw that gap to be smaller and smaller so that students who are leaving schools with a more positive image of themselves and being healthy can get jobs at those weights, you know, and keep up that idea of wellness and not be asked to change what they look like in order to become professionals. And I think there's definitely a gap there in terms of health and wellness.
Elizabeth, from the research you did, is your sense that what we view as the perfect ballet body is unlikely to change? It's not that we can change that. We just need to. Do you think that's unchangeable?
I don't think it's unchangeable. I think that what we see is a resistance from the audience to change, and that certainly came up in the critique in the New York Times of Jennifer and Jared. However, I think the audience would accept a different body type, you know, if it were sort of across the boards. I think that it really comes with education. Someone like Alistair McCauley could, you know, be very pivotal in educating an audience about why it's important to accept different body types.
Elizabeth Sullivan, thank you for that. Jose Mateo, we were just talking about different body types. Do you think that there are viable options for talented dancers, you know, who love ballet but may not have the right body for the Nutcracker?
Oh, absolutely. I think ballet organizations need to look at a disconnect that historically has been there for some time between their schools and their companies. In other words, I think what the caller is saying is that there is one set of goals that are being established for students, and then when they go out into the professional world, they're being asked to reevaluate those. But I think if you are going to, first of all, you have to realize that aesthetics change over time. And so if you look at any art form, you realize that there's been a development over the centuries, and the way we view a certain aesthetic changes. And so I think it's rather interesting, for example, that we're basing the ballet aesthetic, what we call the ballet aesthetic, on classical art.
And I hope we can bring you back more to talk about
it.
Thank you very much. Jose Mateo is founder and artistic director of the Jose Mateo Ballet Theater. And Margaret Tracy is a former principal dancer with the New York City Ballet and a director of the Boston Ballet School. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sasha.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.